And welcome back. How are we getting on, fellas?
Not too bad. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great.
So today we're joined by Brian Sanders. Brian, how about you introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a podcaster. I'm a nutrition, not researcher, but a student of nutrition science. And I, comb through other people's research. I interview hundreds of people now about all the experts on nutrition and diet, exercise, on evolution, on regenerative agriculture. All these topics I'm putting together for my film and for my podcast. And yeah, my story is I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm here in Los Angeles. I went to UCLA and I, had my career, but then I had this kind of life-changing moment around 30 years old, where right when my health was starting to decline, it's that kind of time of your life when you can't eat whatever you want anymore. And it was also, I lost both of my parents at that time. So it was this crazy thing that hit me, which is pretty young, at 30, that shouldn't happen. And it's because they just had these modern chronic diseases, right? The diseases that we didn't have before, that just came in, semi-recently, the last 100 years, 50 years. And, it's because of their diet and lifestyle, right? And, some people try to blame it on genetics or other things, and it doesn't make sense, right? Our genetics didn't change as quickly. Our environment didn't change that much. Yes, it is, a little more toxic environment, but these people in pristine islands in the middle of nowhere who changed their diet have beautiful air and clean water, and they still get these diseases of civilization. They still get fan sick. It's not that, right? So I saw this happen to my parents, and I changed my diet, and simple dietary changes, simple lifestyle changes, and everything got better for me. I went from a size 32 waist to 28 waist. I don't know if that translates to you guys, but I wasn't in shape guy. Like, I was the healthy guy in my group, but then I made these simple changes, and all of a sudden I went to a new level of health, right? I lost all this fat I didn't even know I had. I gained muscle. My like overuse injuries went away, from my engineering days. All that kind of wrist pain, arm pain went away. Allergies went away. So many things just went away that I thought were normal. I don't get sick. I haven't been sick in 5 years. Like, all this stuff changed, and it was simple. And I was just like, I need to tell the world about this, right? And so I decided to make this film. That was 3 years ago, and kind of everything's just been happening since. And there's more we can get into, but it all really started with that. And this is my new life, and this is what I do every day, and I love it. And I'm seeing great results from people around me. I work with a doctor. We help people change their life, get off medications, lose weight. We're kind of trying to hit all angles of this.
Well, you're doing a fairly good job, so fair play to you, Brian. But
Thanks.
what was it? In your film, you really talk about the history of humanity, and that obviously leads into the history of meat eating, which is a big part of the sapient diet. So let's go from the very beginning, the dawn of man. How are they able to tell that, we started off as, as eating berries and shite, and then we eventually moved on to meat.
Berries and shite.
Yeah, well, that it's a very interesting story, and I'm very interested in. Actually, in less than a week, I'm going to Africa to go to the cradle of humankind. I'm going to Africa. I'm going to Tanzania. I'm living with these tribes that still live like we used to, like the earliest humans did. So I will see this firsthand. I will report back, and it will be part of the film. But also, I've had a lot of great interviews with evolutionary biologists, paleoanthropologists, all these people that have kind of showed me how humans lived. And a great one is Dr. Bill Schindler. So he describes way back in the day, 7 million years ago, we split off from our primate ancestors. And yeah, we were just eating like random leaves and berries and stuff. But then we got the ability to use tools, and we would crack open skulls and bones and eat brains and marrow, right? So we were the first animal that, so if, an animal, a predator got an animal, and it was this carcass and there was leftover and there's nothing, no meat. It was picked through. We could come along and break open the bones that no other animal could do and start eating that marrow. It's a very rich source of fat and nutrients. And the brains had a lot of these omega-3 fatty acids, and it helped grow our brains. And so we have this evidence, right? We can see cracked open bones and, you know, we see cracked open skulls, and we know that no other animal could do it. And we have all this evidence. I'm interviewing another paleoanthropologist, Dr. Brianna Pobner, who is the one who goes and studies these and looks at these bones and sees like cut marks on, you know, ancient woolly mammoth and all these things. And so we can see, oh, this is a cut mark. You can see it's like the same butchering marks that we would see in modern day, where it's like, oh, well, this is the, you know, the leg bone, and this is where you would cut it, and you see the marks, mm-hmm. and it all lines up. So beyond the archaeological evidence, we also have you can look at our stomach acid, and we have a very acidic stomach. So it actually is very good. It's an expensive process to develop this very acidic stomach that no other primates have, and all carnivorous animals have. They have this low pH that is needed to digest a lot of meat. Then we have our whole body changed, like our small intestines and large intestines changed away from primates that have to spend all day eating these low quality foods and fermenting and digesting into an anatomy that's more like other carnivorous animals we know, right? Where we have a shorter digestive system that can get all the good nutrition from meat. So there's all this evidence. It's really sad that some of these vegan documentaries, they'll like get a vegan scientist to try to make up some stories, but there's no question of, you know, of our human history and the biology, and everything points to us eating a high amount of meat. And there's even stable isotope testing where you can look at the bones of the ancient humans and see how much protein they're eating. And we can also see that we're eating a lot of meat. So yeah, it's just foundational to being human, right? And it helped us, animal foods helped our brains grow. And we can see this exponential rise in our brain growth. And it was as we developed more technologies to get more animal foods, we kept our brains growing. So that's, yeah. And these people did live a long time. So there's this perception that we died at 30. People say that, oh, well, yeah, I don't want to live like my caveman ancestors that died at 30. They're like, no, that's the average age of death, right? They're including all the babies that died. And, you know, there's a very high infant mortality, or people didn't even make it till 5 years old. So that brings down the average. When we also look at studies of modern humans and modern hunter-gatherers still living this way, and they do have the same problem with infant mortality. But if they do make it past teenage years, they live to 70 and 80, right? So these people eating their native diets still today that we can still study without modern medicine, I mean, they could live longer if they had all this modern medicine, some of the good modern medicine that would help them, they could live longer. But even with no modern medicine, they could live to 70 to 80. And this is all in the literature. So that's kind of where the film starts. And we were living well back then, right? That is necessary, because some people say, oh, yes, but, you know, we died early. But that is not true, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of going back to that thing of letting the food be your medicine, which is obviously a thing we've talked about before when we've had regenerative agriculture people on, or permaculturists, which is... You know, one thing that kind of piqued my interest in permaculture is some people's stance on keeping meat. So like, people keep their own chickens, they know they're keeping it well, but they kind of know, okay, we can't do this vegan. This ain't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of hunting goes on, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, the idea of veganism is one that we see a lot. And I think there was a big documentary fairly recently. I seen you'd had a video. Yes.
Game Changers, yeah.
A lot of criticism there from a lot of people, yourself included. You're not a fan.
We made a whole film the same length as their film, debunking it in 3 weeks.
Wow.
So 3 weeks, we got the whole crowd together and everyone supported it. And we got it made. Yeah, I mean, we broke down every one of their arguments. It's called Game Changers Debunked on my Food Lies YouTube channel. Yeah. Look at. But yeah, I mean, they have no leg to stand on. It's just, it's animal rights movement, right? That is disguised as a nutrition or a environmental problem.
Well,
right?
Let me ask you, is there, from your experience, a way to live a vegan life, healthy?
No, absolutely not. So I work with a doctor so I work with that, you know, an internal medicine doctor, and our stance is absolutely not. No.
Wow.
We're actively speaking against it, because some people, they're like, oh yeah, maybe it's okay, or all this type of stuff, and we're just saying no.
And what about vegetarian diets? You know, like, you can have the eggs, because you had a big focus on, you know, the benefits of having eggs in
so a vegetarian diet or a pescatarian diet would fit into the Sapien framework, right? Which is, after all my interviews and all my studies, that's for 6 years, and looking at all the evidence, that yeah, that's okay, that's fine. If you're not eating like the really bad things, really refined foods, and, you know, these sugars and vegetable oils and stuff, and then you're getting some sorts of eggs and animal protein from dairy, then yeah, that's okay.
And if you feel bad about how they're being, you know, kept in your state or your country, just have your own, man. Have your own chickens.
Absolutely.
Cruelty free.
Yep.
Ideally. Yeah, there you go. I don't want anyone who's like, you know, in that group or in that mindset, you know, thinking, oh, this is a bunch of BS because it doesn't include my thing. I'm sure you get a fair bit of criticism from people who are vegans.
Yeah, no, they find me and attack me. I actually was flown out to Chicago, and I did a debate with a vegan, and it was part of this big conference, and I did a presentation, and then we had this little debate, and we got along fine, and she actually turned out to not be vegan. She ate eggs and dairy. I was like, okay. And she ate fish. So I was like, okay, so you just eat a good diet.
What a fucking twist. Holy shit. I know. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I eat you know, wild caught fish, and I have eggs. And I was like, okay, so what's the problem here? No, I don't want to attack vegans for their ideals and their morals, but I do have counter arguments to their ideals and morals, and that they might be misled, you know, that there are a lot of animals that die growing plant foods. And maybe some vegans try to, you know, grow all their own food. I don't know how you're going to do that, because it takes a lot of, you know,
there was a guy who tried that, Rob Greenfield, and then he eventually had to resort to fishing, and I don't think he hunted, but like, I think he scavenged a dead deer, like, that was just freshly killed. Yeah. That was unique to see someone try to grow all their own food.
It's not possible. Well, there's also a woman here, Lierre Keith, that wrote a great book called The Vegetarian Myth. And I interviewed her, really good episode, way back in my Peak Human episode archive. She tried to do it too. She was hardcore vegan for 23 years, I think it was, and was just all about it. She couldn't. She tried to grow, and she just realized she had to kill animals. She was just, every time she was trying to grow more food, then more animal species would come in and destroy her food, and she'd have to poison them or kill them. And she had major health problems because of her vegan diet. She had permanent injuries because of it. Her spine is messed up because she wasn't getting the proper nutrition. And now she speaks out on this publicly, and she's in other films as well, talking about this, that how dangerous it is to do. And she tries to, you know, teach people that have kind of got caught up in the vegan movement that it is 100% false, and you're gonna hurt yourself.
There's one, she has a social media account, you've probably heard of her, the vegan teacher.
I knew you were gonna bring that up.
But my god, she claims that if you can't, you eat animals, that you're not gonna get to heaven, despite being Jesus being, you know, I presume he ate meat, considering his best friends are fishermen.
There's evidence of him eating meat, yeah. I mean, people have all kinds of crazy ideas, but, you know, back to the research, and we've studied, there was it's called the Ethnographic Atlas, and they went around and studied 229, like all the tribes that were still living at the time of this study. I think it was, you know, decades ago. And none of them were vegan. I mean, there's never been a vegan culture. There's never been a completely plant-based culture ever. And there was, most of them relied most of their diet on meat.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. how often it's pointed towards, you know, native tribes, you know, eating less meat, but never just not having any. Like, I know David Attenborough did this documentary very recently, and he encountered a tribe for the first time, and they ate like meat occasionally, but they still had plenty of like tubers and whatever, and they were okay. But like, again, no vegans. If you go up to the Arctic, I don't know if they're right. I know Eskimo is an offensive thing. I don't know.
Anyway, there you go.
They only meat.
Mostly meat. Well, for one, Attenborough's sort of bought into this vegan and environmental plant-based thing. So yeah, but also there is certain populations that just don't have enough animal foods, and it's fine. I study all these people too. They're all over the world because of their environment. They don't have access to tons of animal foods, and they have to rely on tubers. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. They're eating a whole foods diet. You know, they're not eating crackers and chips and sodas. They're getting, you know, their energy from carbs. You can get your energy from carbs or fat, right? That's what I'm trying to promote, is that most people just think you have to eat carbs for energy and you have to do that. I'm like, no, you can run on fat as well. You know, I've been running on fat for years. A lot of people know about keto diets. I mean, I don't go really completely keto, but you can run on fat. And so, yeah, these populations, of course, some of these people, they live on islands and they have a bunch of, you know, plant foods, and then they get what they can, but those animal foods they get, maybe it's seafood, it's shellfish, it's some even insects, it's smaller animals, that is their most valuable source of nutrition, right? It's like, so David Adam, he's like, okay, oh wow, they only eat it occasionally. That occasional animal food is what's sustaining them. That's why they're still alive and healthy, that they get all their most important nutrients on those occasional meals, right? And you get tons of B12 and all these B vitamins, you get zinc and iron and all these things that vegans aren't getting.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about like deficiencies, another thing you brought up was bioavailability and how it, like in meats, it can be so much higher. And then by comparison in beans, spinach, it can be, you know, crazy times lower.
Far less. Yeah, that's another thing we tell people in the film, because this message is not mainstream at all. Everyone's just like, oh, eat more plants. This is scientifically proven. They do not have the full amounts of proteins and nutrients that you need, right? It's meat, animal foods have them in their complete form. And so not only by the amount, these plant foods have less, but they're also less bioavailable, which means your body can use them. They can't use them as well. And so, you know, people try to, you know, do all these combinations and try to make them, or you can try to make them more bioavailable by soaking or sprouting or fermenting, but still it doesn't match up to animal foods.
And I'm assuming you probably know what would be the closest, like what would be, I guess, the best alternative if you are a vegan or whatever.
I don't think there's a good one. I wouldn't say soy. Some people like to eat soy because it has higher protein, but it also has tons of estrogen, and males or females don't want tons of estrogen. It's going to screw you up. I think soy is terrible. Oh, it's also just monocropped, and it's all like Monsanto, I guess at least in America, but I guess protein powders would be the best, you know, if you're trying to be vegan, because it can at least concentrate it, you know, and give you enough protein. So yeah, so the people, they're like, oh, what about that guy? Like, there's this famous vegan athlete. Well,
vegans.
Yeah, well, they're eating protein powders like every 2 seconds.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, so I suppose you can't really do the whole food thing that, isn't paleo or sapien. You kind of would need to process it.
Yeah, you have to supplement with, well, not only the protein powders are a supplement, but you'd also have to take B12 and there's all these other things that you'd have to take too. So it's possible. I guess it's possible, but I still wouldn't recommend it. And I don't think you can get the full, you know, the fully sourced vitamins and minerals you need.
Well, I mean, like, power to anyone who can do it. Fair play. It must be rough. Must be very difficult. But I guess for the rest of us who just eat meat, how can we improve our health overall? You know, stepping away from, like, the standard American diet and more into whole foods like you talk about.
Well, yeah, that's the main problem. So people who eat meat, they also eat a bunch of other stuff. And then the meat gets blamed for their ill health, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not the meat, it's what else you eat. I have a shirt that says that. So it also just says eat meat really big. It's not, it's what it was. What else you eat, not the meat. And it says eat meat. So that's my main message, is that eating meat is part of a healthy diet. It's what we've been doing forever. And most people love meat. Pretty much everyone loves meat. That's why vegans try to make the fake meat products, right? Because they want meat. But you have to eat meat in a healthy way. So you can't eat meat and then have a soda and the milkshake and the fries and the chips and all that type of stuff. It doesn't work, right? But it's not the meat that was a problem. It was everything else. So yeah, I mean, yes, move towards a whole foods diet. You don't have to be insane. I know everyone listening isn't going to be are like 100% whole foods, like eating, you know, beautiful.
Dude, stuff I had a takeout last night and I remembered I had you on today. Imagine how I felt.
Yeah. But even there's a way to do takeout better, right? That it just, you can just order certain things, right? Don't, you can get like meat and side, you know, some vegetables or meat and potatoes. Like these, you know, these things aren't so bad. You don't have to go, you know, crazy. And I mean, yeah, I go to restaurants all the time. Well, not all the time. I don't even like to go to restaurants that much anymore. I'd rather cook my own food, but I do go to restaurants and it is possible. So I'd say to people, just get the three bad things. These are the sugar, the flour, the oil, right? These are the three things. Vegetable oils are not good. Don't eat vegetable oils. Don't eat these flour, like refined grains, which is, you know, like flour, stuff like that. And then sugar. I mean, everyone kind of knows that sugar is not good.
So I mean, could you explain the first two?
Yeah. So vegetable oils are bad. So this might be surprising to normal people. They're just like, oh, vegetable oils. Yeah, that's good. That's what we're supposed to use, right? No, this is a huge mistake. It was this huge failed experiment. And I've done many podcasts, many just researchers, doctors are coming out or starting to realize that this was a giant mistake, that these vegetable oils are killing us. They are not natural. For all of the history, well, they're actually seed oils. Okay. We call them vegetable oils, but they're from seeds like wheat, canola, corn, canola, which is rapeseed, cottonseed, soybean. All these things are just seeds of plants, and it's very unnatural to try to get oil out of them. And they're called PUFAs, they're polyunsaturated fatty acids. You know, and then animal fat is mostly saturated fat, right? And there's also monounsaturated fat, which is also good, which is in other foods. But these polyunsaturated fats, the ones in the seed oils, are causing mayhem in our bodies. They're not natural. We're eating them in huge amounts. That's very evolutionary inappropriate, right? If you study all the populations around the world that are healthy, yeah, some of them are eating tons of tubers and a little bit of meat, but they're eating zero vegetable oils or seed oils, right? So they're okay. So a lot of people are starting to realize that these are the real problems. And so these are any kind of oil, any type of restaurant, they always use these oils. But then there are some better oils, which are fruit oils. So that's avocado oil, olive oil, and coconut oil, right? So those three are actually fruits. It's actually, you know, easier to extract oil from them. There isn't this insane process of trying to get oil from a cottonseed. It's just you smash olives and you get oil, right? And it's more natural and has less of the PUFAs, the polyunsaturated fats, and it has more of the good saturated fats, like coconut oil is like almost all saturated fat. So these ones are okay. And even better would be to just use animal fat. I like to just use, you know, beef tallow or just straight up animal fats. So yeah, that's the fat story. And then the flour, the refined grain story is these things haven't been around for that long, especially when we refine them down into a very fine flour.
What is it, 0.1% of how long humans have been around?
Of human history, exactly. And when so some people say, oh yeah, but we've been eating them for 10,000 years. You know, it's like, oh, we've had agriculture for 10,000 years and the ancient Egyptians and all that type of thing.
But evolution is slow.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's only, yeah. So 10,000 years is nothing compared to when I talk about millions of years when we separated from primates and our ancestors have been around for 2 million years, the Homo habilis and stuff like that. And then humans 300,000 years. So 10,000 years, not a long time, but also when we developed agriculture, another Bill Schindler, the professor, the scientist who studies these people, he talked about how much of a decline we've seen in the human body since we developed agriculture and started eating all these grains. And we've gotten shorter. Our bones have gotten smaller, weaker. We've got our brains have shrank and we've lived a shorter time. Since there's a hard line in the sand at 10,000 years is when this happened. So people who are promoting, oh yeah, we've had grains forever. Yeah, that's when we started going downhill. This is when we were a very robust species until 10,000 years ago. And the Egyptians were not healthy. They're, you know, looking at the, well, the bones, and they're exhuming the body, you know, they can see the deficiencies. They have atherosclerosis, these, you know, heart disease, because they were eating all these grains. And just even images of these Egyptians, they're big, they're fat. Like,
and another argument for that is that the gladiators of Rome, they used to have like a bunch of carbs. They had like a vegetarian diet, but in reality, weren't they like fat?
Well, they were kind of, overweight. For one, they were slaves, basically. The gladiators were slaves and they gave them the cheap food. But yes, they are also husky guys. So they did eat some meat. So they had enough, you know, protein so they could, you know, live and have muscle. But yeah, they were called barley munchers, barley eaters. It was the nickname for them. And yeah, it helped protect them from wounds if you have this layer of fat so that they wouldn't die. It was the whole point, right? You want a spectacle, you want blood, but you don't want them to just die. So yeah, that was part of it.
Mm. So isn't it mad how we can see like a correlation of, like you were saying, like the brain shrinkage and like TikTok challenges, man? They're such a, you know.
Probably.
It's crazy.
I want to see that study. I want to see it.
It's mad. And I presume all these TikTokers eat bread. I want to put it out there. It's
a collapse of our society.
You know, we can see, you know, from point A, eating meat, to point B, bread, to the lick the fucking toilet challenge. Real thing. Look it up.
I apologize. I apologize, Thomas. What was it? You talked earlier about having a lot of encounters with people in regenerative agriculture. And with what you deal with, which is like a more meat-based diet, people would think they don't go hand in hand. You know, you think of regenerative agriculture, you're thinking, okay, we're going to plant more plants, diverse plants, blah, 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 like we talk about in permaculture. But I suppose what's the side that you take with regenerative agriculture?
Yeah, to me, regenerative agriculture is mainly based around animals because they are the ones doing the regenerative side. I guess there are some, yeah, with permaculture, there's some, you know, nitrogen fixing legumes and stuff that can get nitrogen back in the soil, but animals put a lot more back in the soil, right? So for all of history, we've used holistic management methods, regenerative methods right now we're just, it's not a new thing. It's a new concept for us, but it's what we've been always doing, right? We just didn't have a name for it. This is how farms of the past used to use plants and animals together. So the regenerative agriculture community is just trying to get us to go back to that instead of our industrial farming method.
Yeah, because industrial farming, some would say, has gone too far. I'm not particularly a fan of it. In Ireland, we handle it fairly well, but the way you guys handle it in the States, when I did a bit of digging on that, it's kind of appalling.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Yeah. No, we're ruining ourselves. I've read a lot of books about this and how, just especially in the early part of American history, we would just come in. It was just endless land. We would destroy the soil, just use it up, and then just keep moving. And we're just like, hey, well, you know, there's endless land. Let's keep going west. And we could do stuff like that. And Lear Keith actually talks about this a lot, of how civilizations have this kind of lifespan of a couple thousand years. And it's usually when they start destroying their soil. there is a lot of other things, and but it's like she's saying that, and a lot of other people study this, it's not just her, but that, yeah, these wars and different things happen because the civilization used up their soil, their plant, their
example.
Yeah, well, any civilization, no civilization has lasted longer than 2,000 years. The Romans, the Greeks, the Mayans, these the Roman Empire, the Mayan Empire, these have, just look it up. I don't remember all the details, but they haven't lasted long because, and yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a direct, you can like, people have pinned it down.
Yeah, and be like, I think people might be inclined to take, I guess, that out of context, like it wasn't the main reason, but it was definitely a contributing factor. How was Rome supposed to feed all those people?
Exactly. Decimated. And then other stuff started happening, but some people, this is not my research or Learkey's research, but it is written about, that even all the other conflicts start happening because the food is running out, or they don't have, it's losing nutritional value, because once you destroy the soil, right, just all the food is less and less nutritious. So yeah, I'm not saying it's all it is, but it's just an interesting correlation, and it is very important for a society to focus on its soil health, because that's the base of all the nutrients, right? That's how it works, right? The plants get the nutrients from the soil, then it goes to the animals eat the plants, and we eat both, we eat the animals and the plants.
Like our friend Chris DeVault, in his permaculture system, he has these chickens. So they're eating the scraps of whatever, and then, you know, they're pooping, and that's helping out the soil. And then in turn, everything does better. So, yeah, they work hand in hand. And if you take those chickens out, he's just using up soil. There's nothing going back into it. Or else you might have to get an external source, which isn't ideal in what he's doing.
Exactly. We invented ways to get an external source of nitrogen and these fertilizers based on fossil fuels. And then we exhaust those. And yeah, it's a terrible way. I mean, nature is a harmonious cycle. Right, it all works.
It's crazy.
It's amazing. It's so amazing, and it works. And even the bigger animals too, right? You get the cow. I mean, the chickens are great, but you use the cows. You know, move them around the land, rotational grazing. You know, they're fertilizing the field as they go. It's simple. It just doesn't make a lot of people a lot of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a lot about money. If we can throw that in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. No one's farming for charity. And one thing that scares me here is in Ireland, how little farmers make. And if they miss a year, they're done. They're basically done. There's very little they can do if they have a failure. Basically, most of their money they get from like a grant from the European Union. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it is straight back in. And even at that, we're super regenerative. I just don't understand how it's gotten the way it is in Ireland. But room for improvement.
I mean, just... I talked to Gabe Brown. He's a guy in the US that talks about this, and he went bankrupt because of all, you know, his crops failed, and then he didn't get crop insurance. He couldn't get bailed out from, you know, the equivalent of the EU giving them money. So he had to just start from scratch on his own, and he built this whole system holistically managing, using the plants and animals together. And now he's thriving. His farm is way better than anyone around him. He's in North Dakota. It's very north, very cold. Still doing very well. So yeah,
fair part of the problem, North Dakota.
Yeah.
That's cold.
Yeah. Possibly South Dakota, but I think it was North Dakota. They're both really cold up there. But he's doing it, and he's not relying on those subsidies, and it is possible. So yes, maybe in Ireland, you know, some people are doing it better than others, of just, you know, not having to rely on the subsidies.
Mm. And, you know, talking about, you know, having them work together, you know, your crops and your animals, you said in your film that 85% of grazing land can't be used for plant agriculture.
Yep.
What's going on there?
So, vegans love to cherry pick things, and they try to make it sound bad. But in reality, 85% of land cannot be used for agriculture because it's not flat, or, you know, it we have a lot of land in America that's just flat and conducive for these crops, but most land out there is not that, right? There's trees, there's rocks, there's hills, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And because what's great is that we can put cows on almost all of that land. You know, there's even silvopasturing where they put cows in amongst the trees, you know, they're eating like this. You can't use this land for anything else. So I don't know why there's no need. It's obvious that they have this agenda that they're trying to attack animals and, you know, just pick the worst situations and then say it's bad, but they're ignoring this part about, okay, what else do we do with this land? Right. Or
Yeah. And were anyone wondering like why we couldn't use that? Cause it's just hilly, you know, farming, I guess farming equipment is very specific. It's very, very specific. Like, they can only do one job at a time and they're not very adaptable. The slightest incline can probably bury your tractor if it's wet enough in the soil. Mm. And, you know, dealing with muck all day isn't the best. And yeah, soil gets waterlogged, gets compacted. You're gonna see a lot of that in an uneven place. So, you know, we don't have the farming equipment at the moment that will be able to do it. But at the as we stand, yeah, grazing's better off for that land if we're going to use it for agriculture.
And we get good animals from that. And this is good nutrition for humans. They're upcycling food that we can't eat, right? The grass is a food that we humans can't eat. And so these grazing animals, sheep, you know, bison, buffalo, cows, all these things are amazing. They eat food we can't eat and turn it into amazing food for us that's very bioavailable and nutritious for us.
What is it? Is it doubles the bioavailability of the protein?
Yeah. So this is an interesting study that when you look at all the protein, so this is about protein, right? So the vegans will say, oh, like, why don't we just eat the grains straight? We get more calories from just growing grains and then eating them ourselves. Why do we feed them to the cows? Well, you know why? Is because for one, these grains aren't grown just for the cows. They're grown to do, say they make biofuels, right? We have corn ethanol, right? We make ethanol from corn and then we give the leftovers to the cows. Or we brew a bunch of beer and then we get the distiller's mash at the end and give it to the cows. So for one thing, it's very efficient, but also back to protein. So the protein is important. These are the building blocks for humans. This is what we need, right? These are the essentials. Like, we can get energy sources from fat or carbs and they're everywhere. But the protein that a cow eats over its life, it doubles that, it upcycles it. When you look at the bioavailability and you look at just the protein content, like grass and distiller's mash and ethanol waste, there's very, very little protein. And what they do is over the course of their life, they double it, they upcycle it, they double the amount of protein from what they consume to what we can eat.
And in comparison to a wild lifestyle, they're way better off. Now, you know, there's arguments as to like how you can do it better. But just in comparison to how to be in the wild, they're way better off. Constant food, no threat from predators, well, most of the time. And if they do die, it's not going to be from the normal wild one where you starve to death or get eaten alive. You know, they die. I don't know how you guys do it in the States, but here it's very quick.
Yeah, it's a bolt to the head. It's instantaneous. They get a bolt and it just goes into their brain and they're done. I mean, yeah, great point. They're going to die in nature in way more gruesome ways. And yeah, there's room for improvement too. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, no one thinks that our industrial agricultural system is great. It's efficient and it's supplying a lot of food for people, but we need to, make it better.
Mm. Yeah. There's a lot can be done there, but I only did like some slight study in agriculture when I was in school. So I'm not the guy. Well, no, I don't think any of us are.
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, it's the $1 trillion problem. You know, it's like if we had the answers, I think I have some of these ideas, but they're really hard to implement and we'd have to change the entire systems. And, you know, how do we just go from our monocrop systems where it's monocrop plants over here and then, you know, factory farming animals over here and how to just integrate them? Right. Yeah. I mean, that kind of is a solution, but it's just how do we do that?
Like here with our cows, we let them graze as much as they want until it gets like too cold, and then we bring them into a shed, and they can eat in there. They get to eat inside under a shed, so that, and it protects from the wind. So they're not too cold. They're going to be a lot better if they were out, or better than if they were out in the field. So, you know, that's another thing. You know, if you didn't have stuff like that and they're out in the wild, there's the chance of them freezing to death. But, you know, having these systems in place for when the weather gets rough, it's good. And we all love the idea of, you know, cows that would just let out the graze, because that's a lot more of a natural lifestyle for them in comparison to feedlots, which are a bit dodgy, if you ask me. The idea of just letting them, you know, eat, and no real room to move. That is a pretty awful lifestyle. And, you know, they do the same with chickens, but I feel a little bit better. I feel a bit better about the chickens than I do about the cows, because at least, you know, with a chicken, it's pretty dumb. It's not a complex thought going on there.
Yeah,
I would disagree. I think they're very self-aware and
loving, young, graceful, you know, creatures.
They have very extrinsic thoughts, you know, like, don't go shitting on chicken because you're hungry. Like, you know, it's like,
just because you eat chicken nuggets.
Yeah, it's like,
okay, but yeah, look, the weather being kept, you know, room for improvement, blah blah blah. Yeah. But I suppose, what can you do at the moment? You know, it is what it is until we make some change. And you see it in places like the Netherlands. Like, they have made some crazy changes in their agriculture fairly recently, and it just keeps happening. Hopefully it moves over to the States and a bit to Ireland as well, and see what happens. But absolutely. What was the other one I was going to ask? Thomas, any question? I'm going to check my notes.
You said you're on. What was that diet you were telling us about before we started the podcast? The
Sapien diet. Yeah, so that's what I have come to, right? This is kind of after all these years and all the different people I've talked to. The simplest way to explain it is, yeah, what do all good diets have and what do all good diets leave out? And all good diets have whole foods. They include animal foods, especially nose to tail, right? They eat all the whole animal, right? You eat, you know, you make bone broth of the bones, and you eat the liver, and you eat all the bits and pieces. And I other countries do a better job than America. You guys are doing well, I think, over there. You know, I've been to Ireland, and, you know, even just blood sausage or all that type of stuff, you know, right? You're using the animal. So using all the animal, eating animals, whole foods, and then what you leave out is the sugar, flour, oil, right? The sugar, the refined grains, and the seed oils. And if you do that, you're most of the way there. That's kind of the Sapien framework. And, you know, vegetarian diets fit in there. Pescatarian diets can fit in there, all the way up to carnivore, right? I'm friends with a lot of these people in this new carnivore community, and they're just eating all meat.
Of a guy who was 60 on just a pure carnivore diet for something like 19 years. Holy fuck. That guy was jacked, and he looked so much younger.
I've seen a ton of those stories, people, photos. There's a like carnivore granny or something, and this woman's, you know, like doing like crazy push-ups and all types of stuff with weights, and yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, so I don't go to those extremes. I've tried it a few times just to test it out, but I mean, I do eat a lot of animal foods by calories. It might be 85% of my calories are from animal foods, and yeah, the more I see people eat animal foods, the healthier they get. It's pretty amazing. It's almost like a linear correlation, right? It just goes up. And so, yeah, that's a basic of the Sapien diet. And I think run on fat is great. You know, just at least for some time, you know, get fat adapted, like do it for a year. Maybe that's crazy to a lot of people. You maybe try to do it for 3 months, see how you feel. You feel amazing when you just, when you cut carbs enough to run on fat, you're running on ketones. You don't have to eat all the time. Another part of the Sapien diet is not eating all the time, only twice a day. Fasting. Yeah. Fasting. People know intermittent fasting, or people call it condensed eating window too, where I only eat within 7 or 8 hours a day. So I haven't eaten yet. I feel great. And, you know, it's midday, and then I'll eat a big meal, you know, and then I'll go do my thing. I do a little workout, and then I'll eat another big meal, and I'm good. You know, I'm getting all my calories, I'm getting all my nutrition in, but I'm just not eating all the time. Like, this sort of snacking thing, I think, is ruining people.
So, oh, yeah, I'm good too.
You know, and snacking is such a big part of our society at the moment, where it's so available in like every shop you go into, they're just at the counter or just it's
yeah, and very with popular. Atmospherics and marketing, you know, it's hard to avoid.
Oh yeah, there's marketing. Marketing's a dickhead for people who are trying to lose weight.
Yeah. Well, marketing, we learned some awful stuff.
Well, here I know why. So I figured this stuff out. It's all summed up in the profits in the processing. The profits in the processing, right? So when you start processing food, so all the snacks are made out of those three bad things: the sugar, the refined grains, and the oil. All snacks are made out of the combination of those. It's almost across the board. Okay. And then when you do that, when you add in all these processed foods, it's really cheap, right? I try to sell grass-fed meat here in America. I don't make any money off it. There's no profit margin, right? The profit's in the processing. So if I sold a whole bunch of snacks that have this cheap sugar, flour, oil that cost me like 10 cents, I could sell it for like $4 and I made a whole bunch of money. And what happens when you make all that money is you have lobbyists, you have marketing dollars, you can put together all these big commercials and marketing campaigns to sell more of it, right? So it all stems from how profitable they are and how cheap and bad these ingredients are that leads to this self-perpetuation of now we have tons of money to do all the marketing and have them in every store and have the advertisements.
Yeah, it gets scary when it's, you know, like, well, what is it like, you know, fizzy drinks being like cheaper than a bottle of water. That was a thing here for a long time.
I'm pretty sure that's still a thing here.
I don't think it's as bad now because of the sugar tax.
It was crazy that it was a thing though. Like, if I went to go into a shop, I could buy a can of Coke for a dollar, or not a dollar, a euro. But like a bottle of water would be 2.20. Like,
it's yeah. Great.
Well, that's great. Well, it's about the same.
It's pretty weird.
For us, it's the same cost. Yeah, you go into any store in the US and the water's a dollar and the Coke's a dollar. Like, it's all the same. So it's like, why would I not just get something that tastes better? That's how everyone thinks. Yeah. And even I thought of even before, I'm like, why would I want water when, well, at least I'd started drinking like, you know, say iced tea with no sugar. You know what I mean? It's always there. I'm like, they're both a dollar. I'll get the no sugar iced tea than the plain water. So that's just how people do. That's how they work in the world.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Business is crazy, man. Yeah. Business is crazy. But going back to, you know, your film, another thing you had a criticism of, and it's evident in your own diet, is a food pyramid. You think that that's way out of whack.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the film's called Food Lies. Everything about it, everything we know is kind of upside down, right? This is a classic thing in my world, is like, let's take the food pyramid and flip it upside down, right? And we tell this whole story and why we got it wrong. We did some bad science back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, and we thought that saturated fat was bad. So if you think saturated fat's bad, oh man, you know, red meat's bad, or, you know, then we're like, what do? Well, we have to eat all these sugars and grains and starches, right? So that's what we're going to eat. And also that's what we had available, and that's what was cheap to feed people. So, and we thought that all calories were the same. This is one of my big theses, is that we thought all calories were the same. And when you think that, you're screwed, right? When you don't realize that you can't just make people eat all the pasta and bread and all that type of stuff, and that it'll be the same as eating eggs and meat and the stuff that we were eating before, right? These calories are not the same. Like, so protein calories are not the same as fat or carbs. So we know that. This is very clear in the literature. They designed studies. We didn't know it before, though. It's crazy. We didn't know this decades ago. But now, if you design a study, you have to have the two different diets have to have equal protein. Because if, you know, and then you measure something else, but they have to have equal protein. Because if you don't have equal protein, everyone knows that it's not fair. It doesn't, you know, protein is a different type of calorie. It's a building block, like I was saying, it's the most important thing. And so you can't just substitute a whole bunch of meat and eggs and whatever we're eating with a whole bunch of pasta and grains and bread. It doesn't.
As much screwed. As we all wish we could, we can't.
I know, it's delicious, but it doesn't work.
I would try to cry for the rest of my life if I could.
It doesn't work, but that's kind of what happened on a population level, is we told everyone to eat the garlic bread and the meat's bad. And what happened? it's a slow increase every year of obesity and chronic disease. And I mean, so yes, if you kind of reverse that, this is what we do to get people healthy. I told you, I work with a doctor. What do we do to get people healthy? Do the exact opposite of what they told us to do. Eat less of all those starches and grains and eat more of the meat that we were told was bad. And across the board, everyone has gotten better. We've never had someone got worse, right? This is always, and we track all their blood markers, do all that type of stuff. Everything improves. They get off their medications. And I don't know, you can get into conspiracy land when you think about how wrong we got it and like, what the hell were we thinking? It's just crazy.
Yeah. And you really wonder like how they ignore it so much. Cause like if they're able to figure it out now, why couldn't they back then?
Some of it. Yeah. I like to say, oh, maybe we didn't have all the science.
And it's not that they were a little bit off, which is common in science, you know, like they might miss tiny things, but something this grand, it's hard to miss.
Well, it's not, there's more conspiracy theories out there, but the non-conspiracy reality is just money though. Like I said, it's money, the profits in the processing. And it's just, we just didn't have the, ability. Some of it was based on too, is like, what could we afford? There's evidence that we had a dietary guidelines that had more meat and eggs and cheese and all that type of stuff. But since a lot of this stuff started in the US, right? Then it got spread to the world. So we export everything. We export our bad diets, our films. So we had these, we had to pay for the food stamps, right? The food stamps is the government programs, right? To feed all the people that didn't have money. And they're like, we can't afford to give, we have to follow the recommendations for these programs, government programs, beyond just the poor people. It's like for hospitals, for the military, for nursing homes. And so we can't afford all this. So they changed the guidelines with big industry lobbyists from the grains and all these cheap, you know, big monocrop fields we had available. And so that influenced the guidelines. So it really, and then once it got going, then there was so much money in these cheap processed foods that it kept going, right? And then that's, so it is about money, is that, but that's how business works, right? It's like, okay, I'm a company. I make all these cereals and foods. The government said they're healthy, and now I'm just going to make more money. And if they try to change it, we're going to say no. And we have lobbyists, and we're, you know, going to fight it. And that's what's been happening. And the new dietary guidelines in 2020, they're the same old thing, you know, the same lobbyists, same big food manufacturers just saying, no, we need to keep this. We can't change it. So it's just, yeah, a lot of just money. That's how the world works, right? It's money.
100%. No, and you could even see it from last week. It's how it works when they literally close the stock market to anyone that wasn't a billionaire. It's made for the rich.
In general. The stock market stuff recently is pretty cool. AMC and GME. That's kind of crazy how that happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it is all about money. You can see it in what's going on today. You can see what's going on tomorrow, the day after, and always going forward. But look, what can you do? We're not economists, if that's what you call them.
No, we're podcast hosts.
Yeah. all three of us are podcast hosts. But the last thing I'm going to ask you about, and then we'll let you head on, have your breakfast, is you had this little segment about Derek Weissman?
Eric Weissman? All right, who?
He's the guy who was doing the diabetes stuff. He was helping people relieve their symptoms of type 2 diabetes by just going on like a similar diet to what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think
it's Derek?
Eric Weissman.
Okay. How did I get Derek Weissman?
I mean, it sounds a little similar. Who knows?
There you go. But could you ask me about what's going on there? Because, you know, when people think about getting diabetes, they're kind of like, oh, shit, that's me done completely forever.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there's some stuff going on there, and he says otherwise.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, is this, the mainstream idea is that diabetes is this irreversible disease that just gets worse and you just take more and more insulin and it's a life sentence or a death sentence, I mean, for life. And that's not true at all. We have a lot of great doctors around the world in every country too. I mean, I talk to people all over. You guys got a guy, great guy, Ivor Cummins, and who's the other doctor? Malcolm Kendrick. You've heard of Malcolm Kendrick? I think he's an Irish guy.
Who's that first guy there?
Ivor Cummins is great. Ivor Cummins is a really popular podcast host, and he does a lot of work to show that cholesterol, our ideas about cholesterol are wrong, and about reversing heart disease, you know, and type 2 diabetes using diet. So the real story is, if you, type 2 diabetes is about insulin, right? It's a problem with insulin, right? And what affects insulin, why people develop insulin problems is because of those same three ingredients I keep talking about, from sugar, refined grains, and vegetable oils. All these three things mess up your body down to your cellular mitochondrial level and your fat cells and all this. And you get problems with insulin where insulin doesn't work anymore, right? And your blood sugar is out of control. And that's why diabetics have to take insulin to try to fix it. But the real solution, that's just the band-aid on the problem, is just injecting with more insulin. The solution is stop raising your insulin so much, right? Stop having these crazy blood sugar roller coaster and eating all the refined foods. So if people just take away all the refined foods, take away those three things, their diabetes goes away. And there's doctors, like I said, all over the world doing this. There's Dr. Eric Westman. He was even doing it with McDonald's hamburgers. He was saying, okay, you people don't have a lot of money. He's over in like West Virginia. There's not a lot of money. He's working with a poor community. Go to McDonald's, get just like 4 burger patties and eat them. Just get the patties themselves. Get the cheese and the patties and throw away the bun. And people have reversed their type 2 diabetes, lost 100 pounds, all this type of stuff by eating cheap meat. I mean, really, it's just because you're not going to go on these blood sugar roller coasters. You're not going to have the insulin problems. And your diabetes, I mean, you could say it goes away, it goes into remission. You don't need the insulin anymore. You're fine.
That is kind of, because I heard about this beforehand, and it's the McDonald's, you know, burgers is what really got me. Because, you know, I would have thought, okay, McDonald's bad. You know, like
it's seems pretty common theme. But, well, their burgers, they use 100% beef, right? It's just beef. It's feedlot beef. It's not the best quality beef, but beef is beef in a way, right? So if you can't afford, you know, the really good stuff, you know, from the local farm, you can get by. I mean, you can go to like any grocery store and get some beef and just skip all the bread and the other stuff and the sodas, and you're good.
Well, if it works and it keeps you healthy, you may as well do it. But I don't think for longevity that would work the best.
Well, it's not, yeah. Just know it can work. Some people don't have the money, right? And yeah, and it's like, what are you going to do that makes the biggest difference? And if you don't have a lot of money, people end up eating, you know, the box foods and the pasta and all these cheap foods. I'm saying for these people, go for the meat and you will be a lot healthier.
There you go. That's a nice final message. And Brian, if people want to check you out, where can they find you?
Food Lies. So I'm at Food Lies on any social media, YouTube, Instagram, all that stuff. Just search for Food Lies. I'll be there. And then sapien.org. Sapien.org is kind of just like my main site, and you just find everything.
Yeah. So there you go. You know where to find them. So if you got this far in the video or the audio version, well, fair play to you, number one. Hope you learned something. And take it handy.
Top of the morning, lads and ladies. Support for the Awfully Irish podcast is now brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, and you'll no longer need the look of the Irish with the ladies. Make every day feel like St. Patrick's Day for your balls with Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code IrishPod at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at Manscaped, and use code IrishPod. Use the right tools for the job and trim your pant potatoes. Top of the morning, lads and ladies. Support for the Awfully Irish podcast is now brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming.
Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and you're no longer lead the look of the Irish with the ladies. Manscaped just launched in Ireland. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job. You can now be one of the first men in Ireland to experience their life-changing products.
Your balls will thank you.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code IrishPod at manscaped.com.
That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code IrishPod.